When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, this is Gil Moore, and I'm here with my buddy Jay Scott on The Hook Rocks. What's happening? It is Jay Scott. This is The Hook Rocks, the ultimate rock community podcast. Hope you're doing well. Hope you're staying safe. Glad that you are tuning in once again. Don't forget, we are part of the Pantheon Podcast Network, a great network of music-related podcasts. You can find all different types of podcasts on the Pantheon Network, all different types of music-related podcasts. I always mention my friends Mistress Carrie out in Boston, Martin Popoff, The Rock Historian, The Hanging and Banging Podcast with Vinny Appice and Carmen Appice, as well as Tom and Zeus from the number one rated Kiss podcast, shout out Loudcast, Decibel Geek, Mac from the Ugly American Werewolf in London across the pond. So tune in to him, as well as many others. So check all those out. And don't forget to follow Pantheon Podcast on social media at Pantheon Ponds. Don't forget to follow The Hook Rocks wherever you podcast, whether it's Spotify, Apple, or Amazon. We are available on every platform, and set your app to automatic download so you get the latest episode whenever we do drop one. You can keep up to date with all our new music spotlights, our music commentary, and our legacy interviews. We've had some great stuff happening lately. We just interviewed Joe Satriani, Mark Tremonti, Ty Tabor from King's X, as well as Scott Gorham from Thin Lizzy, and some great new music spotlights over the past couple of months with Bastet, Sixth Sense, Chains Over Razors, and Kurt Dimer, as well as the Georgia Thunderbolts and Joyous Wolf. Had the pleasure of seeing them over the past weekend here. When we are recording this, they're a great live band. So check all those out, as well as some of our music commentary. We did our annual quarterly episode where we rank the top 10 episodes of the quarter, January through March, with some help from our Groove Council friends. So check that out. Gives you a good indication of what we're listening to and what new music is out there. I know a lot of people think that new music is hard to find. It is, but that's why we like to help you out. So check that out. We also just dropped the live album review of Kiss Alive, our fourth installment of that with the Recidivist, Rob in the Hood. We've done Live After Death, Iron Maiden, Rockin' the Fillmore by Humble Pie, and of course, our first episode, Live and Dangerous by Thin Lizzy. So check that out, as well as many other episodes on The Hook Rocks. We're approaching 400. We should probably hit that between June and July. Our three-year anniversary is coming up at the end of June. So there's a lot for you to listen to, a lot for you to check out, like our episode today. It's a band that's been on my radar for a while. Great band that definitely keeps the legacy of rock and roll going. It's a great emerging band. The band is Native Sons, and my guests are Ashton Blake and JT Shea. What's going on, man? How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having us on the show, Jay.
Awesome.
Yeah, doing good.
Awesome. Glad to have you guys on, man. The new single that you guys just dropped is absolutely fantastic. It was kind of funny. I've been listening to it, and your publicist reached out to me, and I'm like, she's like, this might be a band you might be interested in having on. I'm like, absolutely. Absolutely. So the new single is Drama. Get that on all your streaming services. And we're going to get to know Native Sons on this episode today. But we always begin, like we do with every episode we have when we have a first-time guest on the show. And that is really what we're all about on The Hook Rocks. Just like every rock song has a hook that pulls you in, every rock fan has a moment, whether it's a song, an album, a band, or performance that hooked them on rock and roll. What was it for you guys?
For me, it was the video game Guitar Hero. I used to play that when I was a little kid, and that's what hooked me on rock and roll, because I had all those great rock bands on there, and yeah, that's what it was for me.
I guess for me, it would be, you know, rock and roll for me was probably, you know, listening to my stepdad's record collection, the Rolling Stones, and then because I lived out in the country where we didn't have a lot of, you know, we didn't have internet, and, you know, all I had at my disposal was, you know, old records, some of them skipped. But then he gave me this VHS of Black Sabbath, and it was Black Sabbath on tour from late 1960s all the way to 1981 when Ozzy left the band. I think that's when rock and roll for me was like, I want to be, you know, I want to do what he's doing right there. You know, Ozzy and Tony Iommi and all them. So I guess that was the moment for me, is like, you know, watching that VHS tape.
As far as moving forward with you guys and hearing, you know, in your case, Ashton, you know, the classic rock, the albums, JT with you, it was Guitar Hero, it was all that, you know, all that information, you know, technology was really important for a lot of people. You're not the first band that's mentioned that. So it's kind of interesting how different generations have their different gateways to rock and roll. But where did it go from there? When did it become something that you guys wanted to do and be on stage?
Well, I guess for me, you know, I was always a part of, you know, the choir and you know, I was in choir in my high school, which I did that for 2 years. And then, you know, I was all the time throwing shows in my hometown, cause there wasn't anything else to do. So I guess it's just always been something I've wanted to do. Now I guess I can't really think back of like to the very moment that I was like, you know, that it was a viable thing for me. But I guess, you know, as far as touring and everything, I was 19 years old when I stepped out and, you know, I moved, you know, 3 states away to be in a rock band. And we ended up being a house band for, we were an original rock band. We were a house band for a place called Planet Rock in Battle Creek, Michigan, which is now called the Music Factory. But that's probably what kind of, after doing that, you know, for so long and being out there and experiencing different things, for me, that was probably what kicked it off for me.
Yeah. I didn't really have like a specific moment that was like, wow, I want to do this. I want to be on stage. It was kind of a natural progression from, you know, I just started getting into the music through Guitar Hero and all that. And I started playing guitar, and it just kind of all went from there.
Was there ever a band or performance that you guys saw that kind of blew you away and really kind of solidified that path and into rock and roll?
I think for me, it was, you know, seeing, it was actually an original band that probably not a lot of people remember, but it was a band called Modern Superstar. Some friends of mine, I became good friends with those guys, and just seeing them on stage and seeing what they were able to do, you know, even on the level they were at, it was really cool to see somebody, you know, working up in the industry. And I think that several of the members had been in past projects, but just getting to just seeing, I guess, original music on stage, it was something new. And it wasn't just like, you know, the Bon Jovis of the world, I guess. That's probably it for me.
Yeah, so kind of a similar thing for me. There's a band called Tyler Bryant and the Shakedown.
Fantastic.
And I saw them when I was in high school, probably. And I think that kind of showed me that, you know, there are these bands that aren't like these huge, like, legends that are being successful in the music industry. And, you know, he's a killer guitar player. So just seeing that really made me kind of showed me that I could maybe do it if I wanted.
I agree. I've seen Tyler a couple times and his show is phenomenal. I mean, it's the whole band.
Absolutely.
Performers. I mean, their drummer comes out to the front of the stage a couple times per show and
yep.
It's just electric when you see him.
Absolutely.
You mentioned, you know, playing original music and hearing bands play original music, which inspired you. We live in the age where bars are hiring cover bands and people want to go out and hear music familiar. How much of a challenge, how much more difficult does that make it for you guys personally, being an original band, to build an audience?
Well, I think for me, it's been a challenge to think of how can I build an audience organically and not have to rely on, doing covers. I was in a cover band for many years. It was an acoustic duo, but it just, you know, even cover bands don't really draw as many people as you would think. But they're just, a sure bet for some of the clubs. But I think there still is a want and a need, and I've seen it more escalate in the last probably 2 years for original music. You know, Detroit's really good. We've been able to build up a good following in Detroit as well as Atlanta, Georgia. Louisville, Kentucky actually didn't warm up to me as an artist till probably this band. And just kind of, you know, I guess they say, you know, you're never a prophet in your own hometown, but I've got out and I ventured around and, you know, I toured around and I gained contacts. So it's all in who you know and where you are, and it's about being in the right place at the right time. And even then, you know, you've got to have the talent and drive and determination to match it. So it's like, you know, I think that, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, their complaints are warranted, but if you really want to be an original band, you can create opportunities for yourself.
It is interesting though. I mean, the dynamic has changed in so many different ways in rock music, you know, whether it's the invention of social media and the presence that you need to have. You know, and you look at bands like yourself, right? You know, I interview so many bands and you guys just want to play rock and roll. You guys just want to do, you know, get up on stage, kick some ass and release some really good music. It's got to be difficult to kind of shift gears and be part of social media and interact with your fans and, you know, being able to have that personal presence that everybody craves now, because years ago there was like that wall. Right. There was that wall of mystery, of secrecy where very few got to, you know, peek behind the curtain. And now it's a must. When you guys are planning your approach to a single or to an album, what thought process goes into that?
Well, I would say that the thought process in drama, you know, we had actually recorded it months ahead and we had done the video probably. You know, we were promoting the single and the video while making the video. So it's like none of the things that you go to do are inclusive to, okay, I need to focus on just this. You got to learn to multitask. So you got to, you know, mix and master the CD at the same time as recording the video, at the same time as, you know, finding that person who's going to master the video, because video is very important as well. You know, and you're right. The social media aspect of it is a must, but it's an echo chamber. So you've got to think of some other things and other ways to get your music out there, hiring a publicist, hiring, different people, putting money into social medias, but learning where to put your money into social media and knowing your target audience is probably the most important thing that you can do as an independent artist with no record label. And if even if you have a record label, most record labels aren't going to push you as hard as you're going to push yourself. No one's going to put the work in like you will. So you've got to either make or break yourself.
It's an interesting view how each band takes care of this, right? Sometimes bands assign different roles to different band members. The drummer is the drummer, and he's also the Facebook guy, and the singer is the Instagram guy or whatever, or whoever does it. It's just an interesting way because you really have to love what you do. I think every musician loves what they do, but in order to put the work in order to put those blood, sweat, and tears, people used to talk about going up and down neighborhoods and stapling flyers to telephone poles. Well, that doesn't happen anymore, but it's almost the same type of attitude. It's just now online.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It's that, like me, I'm the social media guy. I'm the guy that drives the van. I'm the guy who books some of the shows. I think engagement is very important. Having something to say to people that's not just, hey, we're playing here. They want to see more into you than just, content that you're trying to sell. So it's more about being personable at the same time as being a professional, as a professional business, because music is a business, but there's a lot of musicians and not a lot of businessmen. So I guess, my advice to new musicians would be, learn the business at the same time as learning your instrument.
How tough is that? How tough is it to learn a business? Is it observing what other bands are doing, talking with other musicians and what they do? Is it kind of like, this didn't work, let's try this, just kind of throwing anything up against the wall? How does it work for you guys?
It's the trial and error thing. I mean, I've been doing this since I was 19. I'm 28 now. I've had a lot of experience in what to do and what not to do, watching other people, everybody learns differently. So, it's like me, I've been able to observe people and watch and see what they do. But a lot of it is trial and error. I would say, I've had some mentors that come into my life. They're like, hey, you should really do this, or, hey, this hasn't worked for me. This record label is really going to work for you, or this one probably isn't. This is the deal that you're wanting to do. But in the end, you've got to surround yourself with a good team of people, because you can't just do it all yourself. Like we have music lawyers, PR guys, even if you're the social media guy, great. But if you're not good at social media, you need to outsource that to someone you trust and that is passionate about it. Everything costs money, but so it's easier to do it on your own. Like making flyers and graphic arts, it's definitely, learning trade skills like that will make it a lot cheaper on you if you don't have a lot of money in putting, a band on the road. Like I come from a very poor background. So it's like I had to find clever ways on how to, create something from nothing.
And it's always important too. The most important thing is the music, right? I mean, nothing goes forward, unless you have good music and people want to hear it. That's the most important thing. And playing out live is important. Playing festivals, playing wherever you can play. What's your approach to that? What's your approach to kind of having boots on the ground for Native Sons?
As far as like going to booking shows
and playing live.
Playing live. We get together every now and then and practice the stage show. It's very much about the music though. We're not Kiss in the way that we choreograph every move of every step, but there is blocking to consider. So the guitar player doesn't run into the singer and the bass player isn't, doing a spin while I'm, doing what I'm supposed to be doing and then hits me in the head. You know, it's so there's got to be organized. We try to stay organized and we put the music first. You know, I know I talked a lot about the business side of things because that is an overwhelming part of, you know, the music industry. But at the end of the day, you've got to relax and sit down and write the music. As far as booking, we do have an agent, you know, several people that help us out, book shows, and I book shows as well. You know, so it's like, I guess, you know, raking in all of the connections that I've made over the past 5 years in different states has really helped, you know, past record labels, you know, the one that we were just on has helped as well. So it's just a collection of things.
As far as the music goes, you've got the single out Drama and you're preparing for an album that will come out later this year. What was the approach to this, to the music with the new single and the new album coming?
Well, you know, I think Jay can reiterate this, but it's, you know, me and Jay, you know, we demo the songs together. Like we create the basis of the songs and everyone else puts their own spin on the demos we create. So it's like me and him are, it's easier for the guitar player and the singer to get together, that kind of Steve Perry or Steven Tyler, Joe Perry, or, you know, the dynamic duo stuff. So I would say that, you know, working closely with Jay has been a godsend. You know, it's, I write a lot of the lyrics and melodies where he writes a lot of the music.
Yeah, it comes together real, real naturally with you and I. When we come into a writing session, we usually don't come into it with ideas. We will just come together. We'll come up with everything on the spot. That's how almost every song that's going to be on this album has come together, which I've never written with someone where it comes together like that. It's always, we start with, you know, we come into a session with ideas we've already written. But so it's a little different, but it's fun writing like this. It's a little more spontaneous and it's really cool.
When you guys meet, you know, for an album like this, when was this written, and was there any differences with this recording process this time around than things you've done in the past?
Well, this single and the album that we're writing right now, we have 6 songs recorded. It was recorded in January of this year. So Drama was very much a new song. You know, we've had it probably about in our hands, probably about 2 months, you know, past, you know, like Jay said, it's all very spontaneous. So it's kind of just that staying conscious of, you know, just getting into the studio, pushing ourselves to get the new music out, because in the past we've been through several member changes because, you know, I've explained this on past interviews, but, you know, the original members, COVID hit, they couldn't do it. You know, music business isn't for everyone. So this was about getting our sound out. You know, it's similar to what the old sound is, but it's going to be very much heavier, more raw, more spontaneous. I feel like we're in our best writing. You know, I guess it's the writing's a little more mature. So not that the last album was bad, but just that this is going to be different. I think it's a little bit of the same, but a lot different as well.
How does that sound come out? Is it organic? Do you guys have a sound or a tone in your head that you're trying to capture? How does that work for you guys?
No, I wouldn't say there's like a tone in my head that I'm trying to capture. It's real natural. It's just, you know, like I say, like when we come into our sessions, it's not like we're coming in with ideas or anything. We just, like, whatever comes out is what we write. And it's just, I don't know. It's hard to explain really, but yeah.
I find that, you know, writing, like even me, like, I don't come into it with lyrics at all. Like Drama, I didn't have any lyrics whatsoever. you know, it's, we kind of just laid it out as it is. And, you know, it took us probably about 3 or 4 hours to write drama, you know, to demo it. And then it was just getting it to the studio. So me and Jay write really quickly together. We've probably got, you know, 24 songs in the last 3 months that we've, you know, demoed. So we've got 6 songs fully recorded, ready to mix and master, and probably about 15 more to 20 more songs ready to be demoed to the rest of the band, you know. But not every song, you know, writing spontaneous like that, you know, you're, you know, I guess not every song's a hit, I guess, but, you know, it's more spontaneous, more raw and real, I think, than just trying to be like, okay, I want this album to sound like, you know, something Van Halen did, or I want it to sound like a collection of everybody. It's kind of just us, you know. It's not, I don't go into it with any predetermination of what the album should be. It's just going to be what it is.
When you're finding that sound that defines us, you know, as you say, have you found it? I mean, is this album indicative of what you guys want to sound like, or are you still being influenced and are you still developing it?
I think a band is always developing their sound. You know, you never want to, I guess if you feel like you're in your comfort zone and you're just like killing it, then you're really not, you know. It's like, so I think that right now the sound is where we want to be. You know, is it where we're going to end up in the long run, you know, 10, 15 years from now? Probably not. You know, Faster Pussycat don't sound like they did back in the 80s. They're writing stuff a little raw and real now. You know, not that their old stuff wasn't good, because I love their old stuff. But, you know, their newer stuff is different from their older stuff. So I think that a band is always constantly growing and constantly, you know, adapting as a band. But I really think that the sound we have right now, it definitely makes me feel warm inside to know that this is the direction Native Sons is going.
What were some of the challenges you guys had over the last couple of years? You mentioned some original members are no longer in the band. Obviously COVID affected people differently, and, you know, being in a band, it's kind of hard to maintain a lifestyle, and some people, you know, need to, you know, put food in the mouths of their family and themselves. And how did that change, and how did you guys deal with that?
So, you know, in the beginning, this record, the record that was before the one that we're doing now, the last one, The Natives Are Restless, was actually recorded under a different band name in 2018 with all the members that are listed on the album. We shelved the album for a little bit, and then somewhere around right before the pandemic hit, we decided to, you know, we're going to try to pick it back up and see if we can't release it. My idea was to only release the last album, just to get it out there, to say that I had an album out. You know, so the label picked it up, and then COVID hit, and they were like, you know, okay, all the rest of the band members pretty much dipped. They were pretty much like, you know, we got to go back and feed our families. So we ended up having to put a whole new band together just to release the album. And I thought, you know, hey, if, you know, I guess like a lot of bands around COVID, they're like, even if I just get this album out, I've done something. Because not a lot of records were being released during COVID, or at least I didn't think so. You know, but once we released it, you know, we ended up having to have a double CD release party in our hometown. And then, you know, that kind of sparked a fire where everybody was wanting to tour everywhere. And we ended up touring almost every single weekend since June to November. But in between that time and what we've got now is, what we got now is the members, you know, they either couldn't tour, or, you know, some were in college, so they couldn't tour. You know, some members didn't know what it took to be on the road, and, you know, not, it's not all 5-star hotel rooms and caviar. It's bologna sandwiches and roach motels sometimes, especially when you're coming up in the industry. And then, you know, we hit a bunch of streak of good luck, you know. And then I ended up finding these guys. Jay, he was in a band here in our hometown, and he was really killing it on the guitar. And he brought a really unique approach to, you know, our sound. And then finding Jim Quiggins and Mike Little and Victor, it's kind of just, the band kind of just slowly formed into this rock group that you see now. And in with Drama, I really feel like we have a really good group of guys behind us now. But there has been a lot of, you know, between, you know, our label CEO and president passed away sometime in the mid year. I think it was September. Then, you know, my family members passing away, my grandma and then my grandpa, they passed away around the same time. So it was really hard to be on the road. And, you know, because most of these calls I get while I'm on the road, you know, it's like when home's calling, it's probably rarely a good thing. But we keep those people in our hearts and our spirits and in the music.
You know, when you mentioned playing, you know, live and playing for anybody you can, and going to these different places, and rock and roll has been suffering for a while. And prior to the pandemic, people were worried about its relevancy. And I think there is some questions about that still. Questions about that still remain. But I feel even during the pandemic, rock and roll is starting to have a resurgence. As far as you guys and your outlook on things, how important is it for you to be concerned about that versus just playing the music where you can and making new music that people want to listen to?
That's a good question.
I'm not concerned about it. I think good music is good music, and people are going to listen to it no matter what. I mean, and I don't think rock and roll was ever, you know, on the verge of dying, like people say. I think it's always been relevant, you know, at it's never not been relevant, I guess, is what I'm saying. There's always been great rock bands, and I think there pretty much always will be.
I think, you know, adding to that, for your late 30s and early 40s year olds, rock and roll has been non-existent. At least the rock and roll that we know and love, the 60s, 70s and 80s style, you know, the hard hitting rock. I guess the 90s really put a depressing stamp on rock and roll. And to some degree, I not to say all the 90s were depressing, because you had bands like, you know, Blind Melon, who were not as depressing as, you know, I guess Nirvana was. But it's just that age group I'm seeing now that you have a lot of older guys who grew up in the 80s or the 70s and 80s who are really liking the new rock and roll, but you have this influx of, you know, 18 to 25 year olds that are just all about rock and roll. They're buying the t-shirts, they're going to shows. Like Detroit, we had probably 100 or 200 people there, and I would say that little over half were all young people. Like that's who the rock bands are, all young guys. And like, yeah, you still have your, you know, your older bands like Fozzy still doing it. And, you know, I guess the Dead Daisies, but you have a lot of these younger bands. I would say that the problem with rock and roll and in the last few years is that people with money can rise a lot faster than people with no money. And usually the people with money, I'm not going to say that they aren't talented, but it's just, it does. I don't know. I'm not going to say that, you know, cause there is a lot of people out there that are talented, but it's like, it's a lot harder to get up over a hump and to get into people's ears and eyes And that's why I talked about having a team together, getting people like your PR agents and your lawyers and your booking agents behind you. And it's enticing those people. But rock and roll is not dead, and I don't think it's ever been suffering. It's just you know, music rotates in the light, you know, mainstream music. It focuses on one genre at a time, and I think it's whipping back to rock and roll here very soon.
I see that happening, you know, and I still think, though, that, you know, the popularity of rock music has waned. And when I talk about relevancy, I talk about, you know, the willingness for, you know, people to put a rock song in a commercial or, you know, promote new bands. And I think it's been a challenge over the last several years, but I do think there is hope on the horizon. I think there's a lot of new great bands out there, great new bands, I should say. And I think it's slowly turning. I think the tide is slowly turning back to it, like you said. As far as making music and, you know, being a blues-based rock band is kind of what you guys do, how do you feel about people trying to redefine what rock music is?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I think it's cool for the bands that are being innovative and redefining what rock is. You know, I think that Native Sons is a band that is kind of doing something different and maybe not redefining what rock music is, but I don't know. I guess it's something I have mixed feelings on. I like a lot of bands that are kind of pushing the genre forward, but I'm also really into like the classic sound. So I don't know. It's cool.
I would say that my take on the bands that are redefining rock and roll, I've always been one of those that's like, you know, there's been a lot of talk about support your local businesses. And it's like, the more you go see, I guess one of my friends said, you know, if you're only going to see Bon Jovi and you call yourself a music supporter and you're only going to see Motley Crue and Bon Jovi, you're not a music supporter. You are buying into the conglomerates of rock and roll or music in itself. I think it's great. I think we need to move past a lot of what, you know, the 70s and 80s were. A lot of people are like, oh, you know, Greta Van Fleet sounds too much like Led Zeppelin. Led Zeppelin's singer is like 70, almost 80 years old. He's not going to be around here much longer. You know, I'm not saying that, you know, I'm just saying that, you know, it needs, I think it's time for the sound to come right, you know, around again. It's time for, you know, new bands to get out there and people to, I guess, try to accept them, because that's the only way that rock is going to continue. That's the only way that the music that they know and love is going to continue. And I give credit to a lot of people, you know, like, Brad Lee, he's doing something called Masquerade. He's got a lot of new bands on his stuff. Larry Moran from Monsters of Rock Cruise, he's doing a lot of stuff. Yeah, he has those old bands, but he also has new bands and new music. And that's what he's about, is, you know, furthering rock and roll, not so much the nostalgia, but just being, you know, paying tribute to the old rock and roll while bringing in some new talent. And I think that's what's going to benefit a lot of musicians in the long run, is all of us helping each other out and, you know, just digging deep and trying to reinvent sounds, you know, whether it be subconsciously or consciously.
What about the Machine Gun Kellys, and what about that style that's now considered rock music? You know, you know, that's really what I'm talking about, is like every time there's an award show or every time they're classifying an album, it's like they're stretching the definition of rock music to include music that really isn't rock music.
Yeah, I guess the Machine Gun Kellys of the world. And it's just like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame doesn't know what music is, I don't think. Like, they, I, you know, God love her, Dolly Parton, turned down the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and they pretty much just looked at her and was like, hey, she's flashy. And, you know, they just look at her career. It's, you know, someone said that people listen with their eyes, not their ears. And I think that's what, you know, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame does. It's like Machine Gun Kelly looks like, you know, a young version of Tommy Lee. He's got tattoos all over him. He's rock and roll, man. And it seems to be more of like a term to use to a certain style rather than a certain kind of music. And I almost wonder what, you know, I don't think that it hurts rock and roll at all. I think that people can define whatever they want, but Machine Gun Kelly is not rock and roll. I haven't listened to any of the new albums he had, but I'm pretty sure he's a rap artist. That's what I would classify him as. But if he ends up doing a rock album, then he's a rock star. You know, it just depends on what he's doing, you know, in the music industry, whether he's should be considered rock or not. Like my friend said, you know, it's almost like it's 1987 or 1978 and disco's king. Like everybody's listening to the raps and the rap music and the pop music. And it's like, it's almost oversaturated so much that it feels fake. Almost like the end of the 80s where the hair metal seemed fake a little bit because you had just this influx of musicians, you know, rap popped up and then there was a billion, you know, bands that popped up that sounded a little bit like rap. They didn't go anywhere, but it's like rat is rat. You know, you can't replicate that sound. Motley Crue is Motley Crue. And there's, I think it comes around every generation where this influx of music hits its peak. And I think that's what we're seeing is, you know, the industry doesn't really know what to classify this music and we call rock and roll. You know, they have an altered reality of what rock music is, I think.
So I guess after I've thought about it here for a second, the Machine Gun Kellys of the world, that it's not really my cup of tea, but I think that people like that being classified as rock artists has probably helped rock music a lot, because I think that's what's turned a lot of these young people onto rock music. You know, they get into Machine Gun Kelly or whoever, and, you know, they're like, oh, this is rock music. And then they might go back and listen to what we would probably consider real rock music. So not my cup of tea, but probably good for the genre overall.
What excites you guys about this new album?
I think that we have a lot of great songs. It's a lot of music that I'm really proud of. Some of the best music I've written. So I'm excited about it.
I would say what excites me about the new album is, you know, I would say it's, you know, getting, I feel like the first album I was very held back vocally. You know, we had a producer that, you know, I used a lot of, you mentioned that we were a lot of blues rock, and I wouldn't classify us as blues rock because we're not a blues band, I guess. We have bluesy sounds.
Well, it's blues based. It's not a blues band. It's blues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But some people have been like, oh, y'all are Southern rock. And I don't feel like we fit into Lynyrd Skynyrd's genre either. But, what excites me about the new album is getting to lay down something that feels more like me, more, you know, the way I am today. 'Cause this album was created, you know, in 2018, you know, four or five years ago. I'm terrible with time. So forgive me if that's off, but, you know, I feel like it's going to define the singer I am today.
As far as the music, when can we expect the new album out?
I would say that you could probably expect Native Sons to put out another album around August. If not August, then October.
And what are you guys going to be doing this summer? Where are you guys playing at? I know you guys are playing at the Southgate House, which is a phenomenal place to play.
Yes, we are. We are playing the Southgate House. We've got dates all over the place. We're going to be in Texas. I think San Antonio, Houston. We're going back to Detroit probably two more times this year. We try not to oversaturate ourselves in one area. you know, we're going to be in Nebraska. We're going to be in Nashville. We're trying to get back to Atlanta. We're going to be all over the place, Maryland, Ocean City. There's still some dates that, we haven't announced yet because, we're waiting on the promoters to announce them. I think they're going to announce them sometime in June. There's a new Nashville show that should be announced this week. Southgate, I'm really, really excited to be a part of that. We were supposed to be there last year. That was right around the time that the CEO and president had passed away. So we ended up having to reschedule that for obvious reasons. But now we're back and we're going to be, playing the Southgate House Revival. It's a great venue.
I can't wait. I love you guys' music. I love the first single, Drama. It's an absolute banger. And can't wait for more new material. Is there a new single going to be coming out soon, or when can we expect that?
We are currently in the process of mixing and mastering another single and doing a video all at the same time. It should be out sometime in June. We're thinking every other month, put out another single up leading up to the album itself. We're not sure which song we're going to put out yet. We're currently playing a lot of new songs out live, so. I encourage anyone, if we're in your city or even in your state, travel out, see us perform and tell us what your favorite song is.
Ashton, JT, it's been a blast. It's been a great conversation.
Thanks. Thanks for having us. I appreciate it.
Everyone, that is Ashton and JT from the band Native Sons. Check out their single Drama on all streaming services. It's an absolute kick-ass tune. You will enjoy it. As you know, I'm Jay Scott. This is The Hook Rocks. Take care of each other. Stay safe. We'll talk soon. Thanks.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.